And I'm your host, John Rush, Rush to Reason, KLZ 560. Thanks for joining me today. I do appreciate it very much. John Zemerick joining us now, as he does every Tuesday, from stream.org. John, welcome. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks. How are you doing?
You know, we're doing okay. Hanging in there with all the nonsense in the world today. With, yeah, I guess the plus side for us here in Colorado is the All-Star game is now coming here after leaving Georgia, which we had somebody earlier say, John, and they are very much spot on. The game is leaving an area where the minority population is probably half, and here in Colorado it's going to be lucky to be 10 or 15%, so go figure.
That's right. And don't you have similar electoral laws requiring photo ID that they just put into Georgia?
We don't have photo ID here in Colorado, but we have a pretty stringent, you know, we don't do absentee ballots in Colorado. We do strictly mail-in ballots, but it's a pretty stringent, you know, checking of signatures and so on. I'm not going to say it's foolproof because it's not, but John, we've been doing it for a very long time, since 2013. We probably do it about as well as anybody, given what it is. I don't agree with it, but it is what we have here.
So Stacey Abrams could not just bring plastic garbage bags full of fake ballots?
No, not in Colorado. They cannot do that. No, no, can't happen. So, it's ironic how these folks will talk about some of these things, and, you know, including some of these CEOs, which they're, you know, you and I both know they're talking out of both sides of their mouth, but what a bunch of garbage.
It's total garbage. Well, here's some more garbage. There's a writer at the New York Daily News called Sean King, S-H-A-S-A-U-N.
Oh, yeah. Know him well.
And
yes.
He looks whiter than I do.
Yes.
He claims to be black, and we're all supposed to accept that for some reason. And he did this piece on this post on Facebook for Easter where he tried to claim Jesus Christ for the woke political view. And he says this: the white man's Jesus has always been a farce designed to give them power and take it away from everyone else. But the Jesus I see in the Bible was a man of the people. And he goes on to basically make it sound like real Christianity amounts to voting for the pro-abortion Democrats to use the government to force some people to give money to the government so that it can then use it to buy votes for the poor. You remember when Jesus said that to Pontius Pilate, right?
Yeah,
Jesus
never.
Met with Pontius Pilate,
yeah,
and
never.
Explained this to him. Well, this ridiculous article by Sean King, it's very manipulative, and it's kind of thing that takes a lot of people in. It's actually really dangerous, insidious hijack of the message of the Bible. And in my piece at stream.org, which is called Sean King's Christian Faith Minstrel Show, he is appropriating Christianity for his own political purposes. But the fundamental difference is, charity that you do voluntarily to help someone is what Jesus calls for in the gospel.
Right.
He nowhere says, have the government force everyone to do it, and then you'll get credit for it. The whole idea of Christianity is free will. Do you willingly choose to accept Jesus?
Right.
Do you willingly choose to obey him? Not, does the government force you to get baptized? That happened in the Middle Ages sometimes to Jews. They would simply baptize the Jews. The church had to go and say, no, that's invalid, that's horrible, that's not what we had in mind. It's bizarre. If government-forced charity is enough to answer what Jesus asked for, then maybe government-enforced faith should be imposed by the government if you want to save people. And I even make this comparison. Voluntary charity is like voluntary marriage. Forced charity is like rape. It's like rape.
Right.
The difference is consent.
Right.
And if you don't consent to something, you're not bound to it. And if it's a good thing like charity, you don't get credit for it. If it's a forcible act like rape, you're the victim of it. And this guy, Sean King, is just wiping all of this out and trying to make Christianity seem like exactly what Joe Biden pretends it is. Something you can subcontract to the government to do for you, as if God would consider that enough.
You know, the sad part, John, is unfortunately, throughout the last probably 40 years especially, we've had a lot of Christians and churches buy into that same mantra.
Well, sure, it makes things easy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be great if you could just be a parent, just drop your kid off with the government will do everything, and then you get credit for being a good parent?
Yeah. Yeah, no, unfortunately, that's exactly what's happened to the church in a lot of cases. I'm not saying every church. I'm not making a blanket statement. But, John, there's been a lot of even, you know, what I would consider to be in the beginning solid Bible-believing, you know, Christian denominations that really set out and had the right foundation that somehow got sucked into all of this stuff Sean King talks about.
Well, yeah, when the current is flowing in one direction, if you don't swim hard upstream, you float downstream. And that's what happened in my own Catholic Church. The U.S. Catholic bishops issue about 250 policy demands every year as if they were a legitimate government in exile. And maybe 5% of them have to do with protecting unborn children or religious liberty. Mm-hmm. And the rest are just demands for more government money, much of it to be funneled through the U.S. bishops, who cream a lot off the top and fund 40% of their operations from government contracts. I'm sure a lot of churches are doing the same thing.
John, great piece as always. You're spot on. Appreciate all you do, sir. Thank you very much.
Have a great night.
Have a great night. John Zmirak, stream.org. You can find that article there. And I will really quick so that this can go up on the website as well. I will grab this and stick it in our notes so that Ann has this available to put up on the website as well. So we'll be right back. Flesh and Beck is up next. Kevin Flesh, if you're involved in any kind of an accident, you need representation, or you've got a business and you need representation, or you've got an insurance claim that's not going well, you name it, Kevin is there for you. And it's spelled F-L-E-S-C-H, Flesh and Beck, 303-806-8886.
Avoid the pitfalls with Kevin Flesh. Picture this. You're in court before a judge and jury trying to get the at-fault party's insurance company to cover your hospital bills, and the defense attorney pulls out your medical records. Comparing what you said to the police at the scene of your injury to what your doctor transcribed, you've contradicted yourself. You start to get nervous. You don't want to look like an idiot, but you simply don't recall what you said to the police. That was a long time ago. KLC's personal injury attorney, Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law, prepares you for these kinds of questions so you never need to worry about what to say. Of course, the opposition will always try to call your credibility into question. But with Kevin Flesh, you always know exactly how to respond. Schedule a free consultation now at 303-806-8886. Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law. Trial tested. Trial ready.
All right, a good shop where right now they've got a deal. If you need a collision repair done, any kind, by the way, there's a free detailing with a value of about $150 where they'll take care of the rest of your vehicle as well. Not just that one spot, but all of it. In fact, if you're looking to get a good detail done and don't have any collision damage, they can do that as well for that same value of $150. So that special is going on until the 10th of April. Call 720-541-7697 for more details, or just go to klzradio.com and look for a good shop.
You've already been through a collision. Now give yourself the gift of a gorgeous vehicle inside and out. Al Sturm and his team at A Good Shop Auto Body continue to earn OE certifications for name brands like Subaru, Ford, and many others, so they can get your vehicle back to pre-loss condition with the parts and service recommended by your manufacturer. Now A Good Shop offers full detailing as an add-on service so your vehicle feels like new. Click on the free virtual estimate button now at klzradio.com/collision and ask for a full detailing service, including carpet shampooing for the entire interior or trunk, or upgrade to include a ceramic coating that will keep your paint in shiny new condition. Al and his team want to give every customer the wow factor of a vehicle that feels like new. Mention KLZ in your virtual estimate request for $100 off your repairs. A Good Shop in North Glen and Commerce City. Certified collision repair worth referring.
Putting reason into your afternoon drive. This is John Rush.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Continuing on with our third hour here, Representative Patrick Neville joining us. And Patrick, real quick, I want to say something. You know, Charlie and I, we go through lots of different things, guests and different things that happen behind the scenes that most people don't ever see or know about. And the one thing that we do definitely appreciate about you is, A, not only are you conscientious and, you know, listen and know when to call in and know what we're doing and so on. You know, every time you're supposed to be on, either you're here or you let me know well enough in advance that, hey, I had something that came up, I can't make it. And I'll be honest, Patrick, not every guest I have does that. So thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, I appreciate being on, so it's a great way to get the word out.
Well,
I thank you for having me on.
We appreciate you very much, and I mean everything I just said. So all of you listening, that's the kind of representative we have in Patrick. He does exactly what he says he's going to do, and I appreciate that greatly. All right, before, and I didn't warn you on this, Patrick, but I had somebody that actually sent a email in and asking a question to make sure that, you know, when we were talking to you, I could bring this up. SB 21-182, which is about law enforcement officers arresting students, you know, issuing summons and so on. What do you know about that bill?
So that bill, it's funny because you mentioned that. That bill's it's in the Senate right now. It hasn't even gone through the committee in the Senate. So just so your listeners know, bills come at us so fast. Typically, we kind of go what's in front of us now.
Right.
You know, we hit our 50-meter targets first, and then that one's out there. But that one has been so controversial that I've gotten lots of emails on it. I've actually looked into it myself, even though it's just still sitting in committee. It hasn't even made its first step of moving through in the other chamber. It's an absolutely horrendous bill. The bill as written, we'll see if it changes as it moves along, but it essentially prohibits police officers, school resource officers from basically doing their job. I mean, there's all sorts of things, I think it's on page 13 and 14, they can't do. They can't have a student be asked to be present for a court or any sort of investigation. If the student has criminal mischief, theft, all the way down to harassment. I actually brought this up in the interview I did with Fox 31 yesterday, that they're all talking about, well, the person, the Boulder shooter, had a conviction for harassment in high school. And so do you think that should prevent them from owning guns? And my response is, well, one thing we shouldn't do is prevent the law enforcement from actually prosecuting harassment for high school students.
Right.
And that's exactly what the Democrats are trying to do with this bill. I mean, it's, if you talk to folks like Andy Pollack, who lost his daughter Meadow in the Parkland shooting, he truly believes that it's because of the Obama-era policies like these that prevented that shooter from getting properly investigated by the authorities, because the Obama-era policies did essentially what this bill does. I mean, this bill is probably even worse than that. And totally let him off the hook and let him go under the radar for years and years and years when the guy should have been investigated.
Where do these things, you know, of course, Patrick, I can look at the sponsors and so on, but ultimately, where are these things coming from? Because you and I both know that not every bill that comes out with people's names on it was actually their bill in the first place. They may sign on, but it may very well have been somebody else's idea. Where does stuff like this come from?
You know, it's tough to say with this one. I think this one is probably written by the Black Lives Matter crowd. It's kind of part of their social justice
agenda. I would agree with that one.
That.
Yep.
They're essentially saying, oh, well, these students are just criminalized early on and it ruins their life. And their answer is to just get rid of the criminalization of what should be criminal activities. And look, I get the kind of sense of that. Like, I'm all in favor if you want to say, let's expunge some records after a certain period of time. I'm for that. I've known people who made a mistake 25 years ago.
Right.
Could be something like a traffic violation.
Right.
We should expunge it. I'm all for second starts and everything, but when you talk about just decriminalizing it and not letting police officers, I mean, one of the things written in the bill is they can't even have them up for investigation if they're interfering with a teacher or a classroom. And so what do the teachers do? I mean, you can't call the school resource officer in there if they have them. You've got a totally unruly kid. Is the teacher just supposed to handle it on their own? I mean, this is a very, very...
Well, basically what we're doing, Patrick, is taking, and not that there's a lot now anyways, but any form of discipline in school is now going away completely with this bill.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And, you know, I do want to let your listeners know, I'm getting these emails like crazy, so I've looked at it and hasn't made its first step to the Senate yet. So that's a good thing. Keep the pressure
up. Yes,
yes. Keep it up. I mean, if you want to send me an email, please do. I'm a no on the bill. But
send it to the sponsors of this thing.
That kind of stuff, that's the only way that we can stop this kind of thing.
Right.
If there's an outpouring from the public that just totally blasts this bill as the bad bill it is, then we might have a chance at stopping it. And I think you have a better chance at stopping it in the Senate than you do in the House. And so don't let up. Let up. Keep the pressure up on that one.
Right. Well, and by the way, whoever asked that question and had us bring that to you know, the kind of the top of the forefront today with Patrick, I appreciate very much. What's next, Patrick?
Well, we obviously had the Lost and Stolen bill that passed yesterday on third reading. We were able to get some amendments to the bill, still a bad bill, but what the bill basically says is that under state law that you are basically criminalized if you have your weapon stolen and you don't report it. And so there's lots of issues. The amendments basically that we had were basically three different things. One, that it doesn't have to be you that reports the weapon stolen. So if I'm out of town and my house gets robbed and one of my weapons gets stolen, then it can be my wife that reports it. Two, if you report it, you don't, this is big for me, you don't have to say that you are the owner of the gun. So if I give a serial number out, I mean, what I don't want here is a statewide gun registry that starts happening through this bill. And so you can report it lost or stolen, but you don't have to say, yes, that is my gun. And then the government now has it in a database that you own a gun. I mean, that's just basic gun rights principles for me. And then three, this was also a pretty big one, is we got them to amend it so that if you do report it, you can't be prosecuted under the the safe storage bill that they passed earlier, because that was a big concern for me. You do the right thing. Look, I encourage people, if you get your firearm lost or stolen, you should report it. But I think a lot of people would be concerned because, oh man, what if they start asking me where I had it? Was it locked up properly? And I think there's a lot of DAs that won't do that and police departments that won't do that, but I think you would have a lot of police departments and DAs in some of our more liberal cities in anti-gun cities who would use that as a way to prosecute you and totally invade your privacy. And so we were able to get those amendments on it. But at the end of the day, I'm still a no vote on the bill. It's not as big of a deal as it was. It's still a big deal, but not as big. But I just think it's wrong to criminalize someone who's a victim of crime. I mean, these people had their guns stolen, and you're going to say, well, we're going to criminalize you for that activity.
Well, and here's another question.
Your fault that they were stolen.
As a gun owner myself, Patrick, I guess I have a question along these lines. If this bill does in fact go through and passes, and I agree, if something gets stolen, I should report it. And, I will say this, you know me, I'm a pretty responsible, what I consider to be a pretty responsible gun owner. I'm a collector to a large extent, and I have a lot of things I'll never even shoot. I just happen to have them. And yet, I will tell you that even with all of that, it is a chore to keep up with what you purchase and the serial numbers of and so on. And, I keep a spreadsheet and this, that, and the other. And I do my best to keep that up to date. But I will tell you, Patrick, there's at any given point in time, maybe some items that are not on the list because I just didn't take the time in the last whatever time frame to stick them on the list. My point being, how many gun owners actually know exactly every serial number to every gun they own?
I would guess hardly any.
Thank you.
I mean, I can't name off the serial numbers of any of my weapons, and nor do I want to. I mean, that just, again, that goes back to the whole idea of gun rights, that you shouldn't have to be logged down and have these guns registered by serial number because the government is none of their business.
And to me, what you said earlier, I see this as a pathway to that.
Yes, I agree, too. And that's one of the major concerns with the bill. Luckily, the bill, as written, doesn't require that you report a serial number. It's just to the best of your ability. So if you have that, you're supposed to report that. But if you don't have that, there's no criminal element or fine or punishment if you don't have that information. It's just, hey, I had a gun, and you got to report as much as you know about the gun.
Okay. All right. So where does that one stand as we speak?
Well, my guess is the governor is probably going to sign it shortly. That I do believe that one was a Senate bill, so it's already made its way through the Senate.
So this is pretty much a done deal.
The House yesterday. Yep.
So as gun owners, what do we have to do next?
I'd be really shocked if the governor vetoes it. I think as gun owners, I think you've seen the one that's still kind of out there that's actually is going to be a bill is this waiting period that they have, which I think is very dangerous as well. But they're talking about either a 3-day or a 5-day waiting period. Gun owners need to be really wary of this. Basically, what they say is that you got to purchase a gun and you got to wait 5 days before you can go collect that gun. My concern with this is they're trying to say that they're trying to solve something. But this wouldn't have solved any of the recent shootings we had. This wouldn't have solved Boulder. He purchased his gun in advance of this time period. So what are they trying to do? And what I think they're really, the unintended consequences of this is you have that poor person who might have a stalker, who mm-hmm. might have an ex-spouse who's making some threats. They want to go out and buy a firearm to protect themselves, and now they're forced to wait. I mean, that's just a horrendous situation to be in, and these Democrats and anti-gunners are going to put those people in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, this last situation, which, by the way, Patrick, is amazingly enough, because of the I'll just say it, because of the nationality of the shooter himself, we've heard very little about this since all of that took place, which was my prediction initially anyways. But on top of that, to your point, this would not have stopped what he did. In fact, he was already under investigation, or at least friends of his were under investigation from the FBI. If they couldn't stop that then, what makes anybody think this is going to change it?
Exactly, and that's the same thing that happened with the Parkland shooter. He was under investigation by the FBI, but because of Obama policies, the FBI couldn't do anything about it. And so that's basically what Senate Bill 182 would do with kids in early high school, wouldn't allow law enforcement to do anything about it. And what frustrates me is every time something like this happens, they immediately pivot to this gun control narrative, and instead of actually looking at other solutions that would solve the problem, you take a look at the King Soopers shooting. Mm-hmm. King Soopers is about as gun-free as it gets. They don't allow their employees to carry. Right. They don't allow their customers to open carry. And we're not looking at those types of policies. And so what they're talking about now are some dangerous concepts that I hope they don't move forward. It would take a late bill at this point, but they're talking about concepts of, well, let's prevent people with mental illness from having guns. And that polls really high. That's what they always say, too, because they ask that question. Hey, if someone's mentally ill, should they have a gun? I think average Americans are going to say no. But here's the issue with that. Well, how do you define mental illness? Hmm. And then what are the other repercussions you have? Mm-hmm. So my point on this is, with mental illness, the biggest fight we have with that is reducing the stigma. Now, if you say that someone goes and sees a therapist, should they have their gun rights taken away? Everyone's going to say, no, absolutely not. We want to encourage that. And then what happens, too? That person's not going to go see the therapist because they're worried they're going to lose their rights.
Right.
And so they're not going to seek the help they actually need. So, I mean, there's all sorts of concepts like that sound good, and then they ask these really fluffy poll questions, and the Democrats are so good at saying, well, gosh, 70% of Coloradans agree with this, and so we have to do it. But there's a bunch of unintended consequences, and then if you actually dig deeper, I think if you ask the poll, just like I said, if you see a therapist, should you be prevented from owning a gun? You'd probably have a huge amount of people, it'd be probably 70% saying the opposite, no.
Right.
But they don't ask the poll that way.
Okay. Great point. All right, you got time for another segment?
Yes.
All right, love to have you. Hang tight, we'll come right back. Affordable Interest Mortgage is next. Kurt Rogers. And get your free mortgage review today. Kurt's a great guy. I'd love to help you out, whatever it is. No charge, no obligation. Just ask him. He'll help you through whatever questions you've got and what you're trying to process in your own mind at the same time. 720-895-0500. That's Affordable Interest Mortgage.
Can you believe how low rates are staying? Still in the twos. Back in the 40s and the 50s, rates were in the 5 to 6% range. How much longer are you going to wait? Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Your home has never been worth more. Take AIM to get that lower rate or shorten your term. Lower your payment and pay thousands less in interest. It's your money. Call 720-895-0500 now. Affordable Interest Mortgage. Locally owned and family operated since 2001. Are you ready for the future financially? Many of our clients have the ability to access their equity for 30 years without raising their payments now. This prepares them for those speed bumps of life. Ask how you can become mortgage safe, too. Take AIM, 720-895-0500, where a reputation of putting you first and listening to you is unmatched in Colorado. Call 720-895-0500 now so you can focus on what's important, family. Regulated by DORA, NMLS 298191, Equal Credit Lender.
All right, folks, as I look outside, I am very happy I have a roof over my head when I go home. Happy there's one here over my head as we speak, but I want to have a great roof over my head at home, and you can do that. But keep in mind, that roof, it has wear and tear. It gets beaten down by the sun, by the rain, by the hail, the wind, all the weather we have in Colorado, it takes its toll. And I'm one that says you should have that roof inspected every single year. And guess what? It doesn't cost money to do so. Dave Hart at RoofMax will come out, look at your roof, analyze it, tell you if there's anything going on. And I'll tell you right now, I know Dave well enough to know this. He's a very honest individual. He'll tell you straight up what's going on. Should you wait? Should you not? He'll give you the skinny on what's going on with your roof. And if you're a candidate for his roof rejuvenation product, he'll tell you that as well. And if you are, you can extend the life of that roof, in some cases, up to 15 years. 303-710-6916. Call Dave at RoofMax today and tell them that John Rush sent you.
Save your roof with RoofMax. Avoid a total roof replacement with Roof Rejuvenation. Dave Hart with RoofMax in South Aurora will spray a revolutionary soy-based product onto your roof that rejuvenates your shingles, meaning they become less brittle and more pliable. So when a hailstorm hits, your shingles have a better chance of bending instead of cracking or denting. Think about a rubber tire versus a piece of glass. Because this unique, all-natural product only soaks into the asphalt, it won't stain your gutters, and it won't change the color of your roof. In fact, it'll brighten up the color and leave it looking like new. You'll save yourself the cost of your insurance deductible, the hassle of making an insurance claim, and avoid the risk of your premiums going up sooner. Plus, you won't have to deal with the time and mess of a total roof replacement. Roof Max in South Aurora will rejuvenate your roof in a couple of hours. Call Dave Hart now at 303-710-6916. That's 303-710-6916.
Stay up to date with Rush to Reason after the show on Twitter at Rush to Reason and on Facebook.com/Rush to Reason.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Myself, Patrick Neville, joining us. Representative Patrick Neville, I should say, joining us. All right, so we've talked through some of the gun stuff going on. Patrick, what else is big and exciting down at the State House?
Well, I brought it up earlier on last week's show, but the public health option, you're supposed to hear that last week, and it got delayed. And it looks like it's delayed again. I just refreshed the calendar about an hour ago, and it was supposed to be up and be in committee tomorrow, and it's no longer going to be in committee tomorrow. But keep an eye out for this one, another really dangerous bill. It allows basically the state to set up a health insurance program where the insurance commissioner can set prices for health costs, which the private insurance, you know, brokers can't do. They actually have to go and negotiate that. And they're going to probably set them up close to Medicare or Medicaid reimbursement rates, which are most doctors actually lose money on. And so what we're going to see is the best doctors in the state leaving the state. So even if you're like me and I'm on TRICARE being retired military, I won't be able to find a doctor because there's not going to be any doctors left in the state because they're not going to keep doing procedures when they can't get reimbursed. And so I'll keep you guys updated when that's in calendar. That's going to probably be a long committee hearing, so if they're not going to do it tomorrow, it's probably going to be next week at the earliest, but I'll try to keep you up to date on that.
And make sure that I'm following correctly. Is that HB21-1232?
I believe so,
okay.
Yes.
I just want to make sure that I'm following correctly. Okay, that's all I needed to know. What's your thought on it moving forward? In other words, what's your gut feeling? You have a pretty good gut feeling so far in everything we've talked about. What's your feeling here?
Well, my take is if they keep moving it out, they're having some trouble in that first committee, which if they're having trouble in the first committee in the House, that's a good sign. But what they're probably doing is just negotiating some amendments, and something very similar is going to come out. But you're not going to see any significant changes coming in that in the introduced version. So, like, I think even like the 182, that bill that we talked about, I think you have a better shot at defeating such a measure in the Senate. But we'll see as time goes on. So my fear on this is what the Democrats love to do is get one minor change here or there that might help a specific hospital in, you know, typically it's a rural, but doesn't have to be. It could be a suburban district. And that Republican basically negotiates and says, well, if you get this for my district, then I'll go on the bill. And then they can turn around and say, this bill's bipartisan. And so they're probably trying to work some deal like that. So really hold your Republicans accountable on this. Make sure they don't go on this. This is going to lead to socialized medicine in the state of Colorado.
But they're not selling it that way on the front side. They're selling it as, hey, we want you to have another option.
Yes, exactly. But
right.
it's an option that no one else will be able to compete with. And that's why I say about 3 years, I think it'll lead to socialized medicine. So really, I think you probably have mostly Republican listeners or Republican-leaning listeners. So just hold your Republican legislators' feet to the fire. Don't let them get sold by the snake oil that's often, you know, peddled down there at the Capitol. So that one, well, like I said, we'll keep you guys up to date.
Okay.
There was an interesting bill, a good news story, I guess. So there was an interesting bill that was brought forward by a Democrat. And I was kind of cautious on this, but what's happening in the state of Colorado right now from laws that were passed under the Bill Ritter administration is that if you go into foreclosure proceedings, obviously your first note that you took the mortgage on has priority, but you could have taken that note out 20 years ago and maybe say you only owe $100,000 on that. And maybe some life event, who knows, maybe someone gets dementia, I don't know what the event is. So things start happening, and they can't pay their HOA fees.
Oh.
So the HOA fees take out a lien on your house. Well, they become secondary, and then they get to hold that note. And so what's happening is that people get going to foreclosure, and the HOA sells that lien to someone else, and then that person owns that entire note. So people are buying these $8,000, $10,000 liens on houses, and then when it goes into foreclosure, they get to keep all the excess equity that people are getting sold. And so we passed a bill that was a unanimous in committee. Hopefully it's unanimous getting out on the floor. I think it's good policy, but that final, whatever's, you know, the final foreclosure is, the excess proceeds should go to the original owner of the note or the estate if the person is deceased.
Not the HOA.
It shouldn't be taken by, right, exactly.
By the way, that's a, yeah, great bill. These HOAs, as you know my feelings on, I think have far too much power in the first place. This takes some of that power away from them. And incentive,
really,
by the
does.
Way, as well, right?
It does. And, I mean, what's happening oftentimes, too, is sometimes they'll be the ones that initiate foreclosure
right.
after a certain
Yeah, because there's incentive there to do so.
Right. And in the law, the way it's written now, really is a disadvantage to the homeowner, because some people don't know. They get in a fight with their HOA, and they say, well, I'm not going to pay my fees. And there's a lawsuit that takes 2 years to go through, and meanwhile, HOA goes and forecloses on their house.
Right.
And guess what? They own it.
Right.
And people don't know that.
Yeah, and by the way, those of you that are listening, and most of you that are probably know this, but what you just said, Patrick, about the two-year time frame on an HOA deal, you're not far off on that at all.
No. With the pandemic, it's probably even more now.
Yeah.
That was just kind of a general rule of thumb even before that.
Spot on. All right, what's next?
So those are most of the kind of interesting bills we have going forward. We've got some other ones that did some good, trying to leave on some good news stories. So right now, the Office of Information Technology, they actually brought in someone from the private sector, believe it or not. And what we have going on, with people don't realize what's happening with the state, is Bill Ritter, I believe it's Ritter, either Ritter or Hickenlooper, basically made the Office of Information Technology all one office, and they basically took all the tech workers from every department in the state and put them under this one office. So it's created this total bureaucracy where these IT workers basically don't report to any direct person.
Oh, geez.
So they might be. So it's weird when you go to register your vehicle under, you know, I'll just use C-Stars on that old system before we got the drive system put in place. The person who ran that worked for the Office of Information Technology, not to DOR. That actually, where DMV sits under DOR, and just totally inefficient mess, right? So there's no reporting. The departments would say, "Hey, we want this done," and then IT would come back with some huge price tag. And the idea behind the creation was, well, we're going to create efficiencies because of economies of scales, and it's done the opposite. It's created complete inefficiencies. And so Mark Baisley brought a bill forward that basically allows the agencies to have some more say in that. And so I think it's a good citizen bill, too, because when citizens go to the DMV and they have an issue, maybe there's some tech issue that prevents the DMV from doing the right thing, who do they hold accountable? You know, you want to hold accountable that department that you're actually working with right now. Well, in Colorado, that's not really the case, because they have no control over the IT workers who are actually doing the work for them. And so this gives the agencies a lot more accountability. I think that's a good thing, especially with some of the major problems we have.
I agree.
I mean, I think you guys were talking about it earlier with unemployment fraud.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just one example to name a few. It's, you know, you have the CDLE getting completely blasted, and a lot of it's their fault. Some of it's the Office of Information Technology's fault as well. But I really want to – we need to have a system in place where, you know, who's the belly button, who's responsible for this, and we can really point to that person, and this bill goes towards that.
Well, you know, the other question I guess I would have along these same lines, back to what we talked about earlier in regards to our unemployment issue in the state, what sort of and what division would be responsible for checks and balances to make sure that we are up to speed in all of these areas and we don't lose, in this case, we're going to end up losing, from the sounds of it, $1 billion on fraudulent claims that the state's going to be paying out when it's all, we're already at $500 million, and our guest said it's going to be $1 billion before it's all said and done. Now, you know, granted, he could be off some, but regardless, somewhere between those two, still a big number, Patrick, that at this point, I as an employer are going to have to probably make up that fund at some point in time. Question I have is, what checks and balances do we have across the board to make sure this doesn't happen in other areas? Or do we?
The only sort of check we have is the Office of the State Auditor. who can go in and audit and give reports to the General Assembly, and then we can do something about it. But you rarely see that. We actually, our state auditor does a terrific job. She's wonderful. But she has since said that she's not going to seek another term, so I think we're going to lose her. But the problem is, she'll give us these great reports, talk about accountability within the agencies or lack thereof, and bring that to the legislator, and then we'll bring bills forward to address it, and the Democrats defeat it because it might go against the governor's agenda. He's the man right now, so that's really the problem. And when you look at this UI problem, it's been going on for months and months and months, and still nothing's being done to address it. And so I really hold the governor accountable. I mean, he can't just say, well, it's this guy. You're probably going to see, my guess is you'll see some resignation within CDLE, and they'll try to take the fall. But I really blame the governor. Why haven't you fired that guy yet?
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't you making this a main priority? Instead, you're spending all your time trying to make sure that we get the All-Star game here.
Yeah, that was my next question.
Who's $1 billion. And even before the fraud happened, I was saying we should be reimbursing the UI fund because of the shutdown. So the UI fund got basically emptied out because the governor forced businesses to close, forced people to lay off. That's not the business's fault. That's the government's fault for doing that in the first place. And then we have the fraud on top of all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's going to lead to those higher unemployment costs for employers, and they're going to hire less people. It's a terrible, I mean, it's heading to be a terrible, terrible disaster.
I agree. And again, I think as a state, you said it, you took the words out of my mouth, instead of worrying about bringing the All-Star game here, which I get brings revenue in and so on, and I get bringing in revenue. You know me, Patrick, I'm a business guy, but I also know that if we've got a bleeding hole where right now there's potentially $1 billion going out of it, there ain't an All-Star game in the world that's going to come in and replace that.
No, not even close. And it doesn't seem like it's on his radar at all. You don't see him doing press conferences about what he's going to do to fix this horrible situation.
No, in fact, that's to me one of the huge disappointments that I guess I have as an employer, not just as a conservative, but as an employer in general. He's not addressing any of that and telling me how I am not going to be on the hook for their screw-up. This is not a fault of mine as an employer. It's the fault of the state, and in this case, because they didn't have the right systems in place to even thwart the fraud on the front side, I now, as an employer, are going to make that up? That's crap, Patrick.
It is crap, and then what's even, it's just as bad, I wouldn't say worse, but just as bad is there's people that actually do have legitimate claims.
Yeah, that need it.
What? Because there's been so many fraudulent claims that
aren't
being processed either. So people that are on their last bit of savings have been waiting patiently, and they're still not getting a response, but they're legitimate. And because of all this backlog from the fraudulent claims, they're not getting reimbursed for what they should be.
All right. Well, question that I have on that game coming here, and maybe you know some things, maybe you don't, but when it comes to, you know, laying things out on the table that may entice the MLB to come here, what can the governor and or the mayor do without getting approval from either council and the part of the mayor's end of things or you guys legislatively speaking when it comes to the governor? In other words, what can these guys lay on the table without getting approval first?
There's very little the state can do. Now, the city can do a lot more than the state. My guess is that's happening as far as actual funding goes. The governor does have the Office of the Tourism that they can use. It's the same thing that they've used in the past for film subsidies and stuff like that. But there's not much in there. I mean, you're talking like low millions. I don't know the exact number, but there's not much in there that we appropriated from the last budget cycle, if much at all.
Okay.
There would have to be some sort of appropriation to that coming from the legislator.
Okay.
Maybe
that's what I thought.
He's already made that promise and secured the votes. I don't know. And the other thing I think is, so let's respond to a pandemic, because last time I checked, people like Bandimere can't still have more than 300 people.
Right.
And so we're going to bring people from all over the world to Denver. And so, okay, when do you start loosening up restrictions? I mean, this is not that far off. It's in July, and he hasn't talked about loosening restrictions yet. So are we adding in? Are we not? What's going on?
Right. No, you bring up some great points. And I guess to me, you know, personally speaking, and, you know, we talked to Jennifer Kearns earlier about this as well, and I'm still trying to wrap my head around, the MLB has decided to take the All-Star game from a area in the country with at least 50% minority participation in probably all of the you know, the game itself, the vending, you know, the businesses around it and so on. You're now going to take it to what I would call white America, you know, here in Colorado, to where, let's face it, you know, probably 85% of everything around there is going to be, you know, white, you know, owned and operated and things along those lines. Maybe my figures are off a little bit, but you get where I'm going with this. You know, what incentive did we give them to come here? Because frankly, what I just said to me would not be enough incentive for the MLB to show up here.
Yeah, me either. And so I don't know if there were other assurances that he gave regarding when it comes to restrictions and lockdown restrictions with the pandemic. I have no idea what conversations were made. What, the same thing with, it goes with the city of Denver. They made those same assurances. They might very well have. But even that, my guess is that in a way, Atlanta and Georgia would have made those same.
Yes.
Probably the same thing to get it. I mean, there's a lot of restrictions than we are. So I know those weird things. Is this just all about virtue signaling and being a part of the PC culture? And then you even take a look at the Georgia bill. Quite frankly, it's not very far off from what we do. I mean, things like requirement signature verification for mail-in ballots.
Right.
We do that in Colorado. I mean, I think we can tighten it up and do a better job of it, but we do that.
I agree.
There's nothing crazy about that. And same thing, if you, at some point in time, you do have to validate that you get the mail-in ballot through some sort of identification. So you can get a provisional ballot in Colorado and vote, but then you've got to eventually at some point get your identification and confirm your identity through the system. So Georgia was really just not far off from what we do in Colorado.
Right.
And so this is just nothing but sheer virtue signaling by Major League Baseball.
You're exactly right. And I will remind everybody, Governor Polis, quote, said, "This game will be in July, so none of that will be a concern by them," unquote. And he's talking about the pandemic limiting the size of the crowd. So just leave you with that, Patrick.
Yeah, so I guess we know the end date.
Yeah, exactly.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, it really is. Patrick, as always, and I said earlier, I really appreciate. Thanks for your time and, you know, just your courtesy to us. I really do appreciate it very much, sir.
You bet. Thanks for having me, John.
You bet. Have a great evening. Representative Patrick Neville, and I appreciate his time. Novus Auto Glass is next, folks. And at Novus, they do want to take care of you. Make sure you can see clearly as I look outside right now. And it is snowing, and it is fairly dark, even though the sun is not even close to setting right now. Pretty good storm coming through right now. Won't be here very long. But you want to make sure you can see clearly. And I will be reminded on my way home tonight as I run the windshield wipers that if my windshield is all pitted up and the wipers don't work like they're supposed to, your vision is impaired, I should say. And you know what? Novus Auto Glass can help that by putting in a new windshield. So go to Novus Auto Glass today. They'd love to take care of you. They work with all insurance companies, and it's really easy. Just go to rushtoreason.com/Novus, and Novus is Novus.
Take control of the process with Novus Auto Glass. Insurance companies want you to use one of their recommended shops, so they get a discount. John Rush endorses Novus Auto Glass because he trusts the quality of their work. In today's modern car, your windshield has become a structural component of your vehicle. Unlike in classic cars, where your windshield was just something to look through, today's windshields bear pressure as part of the frame. Your windshield has become a safety feature of your vehicle, so quality repairs matter. With every repair or replacement, Novus Auto Glass records detailed specs, including the temperature outside, the serial number of the vehicle, and the type of urethane they use, so you can have confidence that your windshield won't pop out at the wrong moment. Instead of letting your insurance company choose the cheapest option, take control of the quality with the inventors of windshield repair. Find Novus Auto Glass now at rushtoreason.com.
Choose an agent that represents you, not the insurance company. Call Paul Lenigro and his team at Group Insurance Analysts, an independent insurance broker, for a complimentary analysis of your current insurance plans. 303-423-0162.
It's time to leave your safe space. This is Rush to Reason on KLZ 560.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Thanks for joining us today. I do appreciate it very much. And again, thanks to Patrick for taking time out of his day and joining us. Lots going on down at the State House, and I appreciate him keeping tabs on things, informing all of us of what's going on and what we can do to try to thwart some of these things. And I know at times it feels like we're, you know, unable to do those things, you know, thwart some of those things. But as you heard him say, in a lot of cases, those, you know, inquiries, emails, phone calls, and so on, believe it or not, they do make a difference. So keep it up when it comes to some of these things we want to oppose. So speaking of things that I personally am opposed to. I think most are. Evidently most are. Or this would not have been an announcement today. But the Biden administration announced today that it won't require Americans to have a vaccine passport, which, by the way, are being developed in a lot of places and will most likely be used around the world, but they're being developed to verify your COVID-19 immunization status. Quote, there will be no federal vaccination database and no federal mandate requiring everyone to obtain a single vaccination credential, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki told reporters. As the AP has explained, these so-called passports are typically an app with a code. You can see those, by the way, out on the internet. Just Google it and you'll find one and see what it looks like. That verifies whether someone has been vaccinated recently or recently tested negative for COVID. Some lawmakers are uncomfortable with the idea. And on Monday, for example, Texas Governor Greg Abbott, a Republican, issued an executive order against vaccine passports, saying they infringe on citizens' rights. He said government should not require any Texan to show proof of vaccination and reveal private health information just to go about their daily lives. And by the way, he is 100% correct. Let's hope that other governors will have the same backbone that he has to make the same statements to, again, make sure that the White House and our government officials do not go directions that we do not want them going. And I, for one, do not want us having any kind of a, you know, vaccine passport. Now, all that to say this, I can't guarantee you, and most likely you'll see it in other countries. Mexico could have one. Some of the countries surrounding us, Canada, could end up having one. You know, the reality is if it goes that direction and you travel to those countries on a frequent basis, you may not have any choice but to get some of those things done. We will see how that all pans out. I don't have a good feeling one way or the other. I know that foreign countries love control. Our own country and the Democrats especially love control. So if they have the ability to do so and control you at the same time, they will. It will be interesting to see what happens with this in regards to you know, vaccine passports around the world. Luckily here, that statement was made today. I don't put much, how should I say this, much confidence in what the administration says right now, because they could come around tomorrow and say, well, we've reviewed things a little more and we were wrong. We need to go ahead and do this. So you know what? Just because they said that today doesn't mean that I'm buying it, but at least we heard that today, and that's at least, in my opinion, a good sign heading that direction. But time will tell whether or not they stick to that or not, and I really have no idea. If that changes or I find anything else out that comes up, believe me, we'll be the first ones to let you know. And I'll be, you know, as somebody that travels a lot, I will be watching that very, very closely. Extreme Auto Repair is coming up next, folks. And as I look outside, again, yes, I'm reminded that, yeah, we need good tires. And one of my biggest pet peeves, and you all know this, is when you're behind somebody at a stoplight or somewhere out traveling around, and you cannot get from A to B because they did not have the proper equipment, tires, and so on. Don't let that be you. I always say, don't be that guy. Get that handled, Extreme Auto Repair. You can do that. They've got a great deal right now on Cooper Tires. There's some great rebates happening all the way through April 12th. All you have to do is check it out. Give them a call, 303-841-1071, or go online, klzradio.com, find Extreme Auto Repair there, and then please let them know you heard them on Rush to Reason.
Go with your gut. You know when an estimate from a mechanic doesn't feel right. Maybe they're telling you to fix a bunch of stuff you didn't even know was broken. Maybe their prices seem surprisingly high. The team at Extreme Auto Repair in Parker will give you a second opinion for free, so you know what's reasonable and what's not. They can typically beat the prices of their competitors, but they won't hold it against you if you decide to go back to the first guy. Either way, you have the peace of mind. The team at Extreme Auto Repair wants to keep you safe and keep your vehicle on the road longer, but they never want to pressure you into repairs that you don't really need. So with every estimate, the team at Extreme Auto Repair will give you a priority list, showing you all of your recommended maintenance items in order from the most to least important. That way, you decide what you want to take care of now and what can wait until later. Free second opinions at klzradio.com/extreme. Promises kept.
Stay up to date with Rush to Reason after the show on Twitter at Rush to Reason and on Facebook.com/Rush to Reason.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Fast show today, folks. Thank you all for calling in and just texting, supporting, doing the things that you did. I got a lot of text messages that came in here just recently. I will do my best to read all of those and get back to you as soon as I can. I apologize when I'm by myself and And Andy's not with me. Typically, he is on Tuesdays, but because of what I've got going on, he's going to fill in for the rest of the week. So, but I do appreciate all of you doing that and just keeping me abreast of different things and even giving me tips and things I can actually go look at and read and watch and understand more about what's going on as well. So thank you all for that very much. I do appreciate that. And I will say a shout-out to Andy. Thanks for filling in here the next few days as I go take care of some family business. I appreciate him doing that very, very much. And he's been a huge help. I don't think any of you really know when it comes to what I've had going on in that area. Andy's been just a moment's notice away for coming in and doing what's needed here to take care of things. And I do appreciate that very, very much. So I appreciate all that he's done. And listen to him the next 3 days. He's got some great guests lined up. Matt Peel's going to join him tomorrow for Health and Wellness Wednesday. Richard Battle as well. Rachel Keene will be with him on Thursday. And then he and Richard on Friday are going to do movie rental reviews with the cast members doing movies from SNL. So that plus much more. Don't go anywhere. The first hour is up next. Rush to Reason. Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560.